question was asked, we know every nation has a defining characteristic. And what is the defining characteristic of Amalek? So before we start discussing Amalek, I want us to begin with another concept, which is a very important concept. Rambam, in his introduction to the 10th chapter of Sanhedrin, says there is a key component to learning Torah, and that is intellectual honesty. Says Rambam, when we learn, we have to be brave enough to say, I don't understand this. Part of learning is when we encounter a concept that doesn't resonate with us, knowing to balance two things. On the one hand, being able to say, I respect the people who said it. They've won my respect. I know they're smart people. On the other hand, retaining the honesty to say, I respect them, but I don't understand them. They're saying something here. They must know what they mean. I don't know what they mean. I don't understand the logic of it. And that's a very important component in learning. Says Rambam, you have people who say, nonsense. So they don't understand that. The rabbis were very learned people. You have people who say, if the rabbi said it, it's true, and it doesn't matter all the scientific proofs to the contrary. Well, that doesn't sound logical. And then, says the Rambam, you have the correct approach, which says, if they said it, they were smart people. If I don't understand it, I don't understand it. So we leave it at that. There might be a component I don't understand. It could be over time I'll understand better. And it could be I won't understand. I have people who have won my respect and I still don't understand everything they've said. That's the balance. I say that because specifically with regards to Amalek, we have a mitzvah in the Torah that deserves a lot of introduction. And the mitzvah with regards to our battle with Amalek is one which I don't think a person can connect to when they first start learning about Judaism. I think the legitimate, honest approach is, I hear it, and I have questions about it, and I don't understand it, as King Saul himself said he didn't understand it, and I respect it, that's the mitzvah I have, but I still have to work on understanding what's going on here. It doesn't resonate with me, so just because a mitzvah doesn't resonate doesn't mean I have a right to erase it from the Torah. God told us something. Okay, what can I do? But I still have to retain that honesty to say, I don't understand. And that's a very important balance. So I could spend the next 15 minutes discussing logical explanations to the mitzvah of our war with Amalek. And I don't believe you should buy them from me. I could give them, I could sell them, and I believe them. But I think in order to really accept them and connect to them, you need years of introduction. It's not something which you can conquer in one class. It's something which down the road you'll understand more, and then you'll revisit the question. If we address it now, to my mind, it will be a laundering of concepts. You could say nice words, and then you could say, because of these nice words, so everything makes sense. I don't buy it. I think you have to really understand the concepts of Torah before you can understand that mitzvah. And so I am purposely leaving that aspect on the side, not to be ignored, but to be revisited. A person can't say when they enter studying a whole, you know, this is a whole wisdom, the Torah. Now give me the hardest concept I want you to explain to me today. I also want to explain to you today, but I don't think we can get there. That's why I'm leaving that on the side. An acknowledged note, I'm leaving it on the side. Nonetheless, Chazal tell us that our different enemies have different points that are their stress, that are their focus when they attack us. And what is Amalek's focus? So Amalek's focus breaks up into a few segments. We're going to concentrate on one. And that is Amalek's fight whenever spirituality is revealed, or whenever there is a weakness in Israel, Amalek tries to pounce on that. So our story of Amalek really begins with a very sad story of Jewish history. There was a woman named Timnas who came to Avraham Avinu and said, I want to join the Jewish people. And Avraham Avinu turned her away. And when she couldn't join the right way, so she joined the inappropriate way with his grandson, with Esav's son. And then ultimately from that came the child Amalek. And our sages say that throughout Jewish history, our greatest challenges and threats have come from people where they wanted to join and we pushed them away. We were too rough with them, including also Ish, including the man, that man. He also initially wanted to return. And his Rebbe intended to allow him to return, and through a misunderstanding, he thought he has no hope, and so he went and did what he did, created a whole religion. But that's the beginning of Amalek. There was a man named Amalek, Esav's grandson. And when the Jewish people went down to Egypt, so Esav told his grandson, he said, listen here, they're going to pay the bill. They're going to go to Egypt. They're going to spend the years in servitude. When they come out and they want to take the land of Israel, attack them. That's your job. And then you'll take out the old enmity that I have towards them. You'll close the deal with them. You'll wipe them out. And that's why we find that Amalek crossed great terrain to attack us. We weren't a threat to them, but they were interested in attacking us. Their interest, firstly, was an ancient hatred. Secondly, we were representing the idea of a revelation of Hashem in the world. Look at what's happening. Hashem does 10 great plagues on behalf of the Jewish people, takes them out of Egypt. The whole world is in awe, and the world is starting to shift, and Amalek says, I have to stop that. And the third point that Amalek came to attack was our connection to the land of Israel. So Amalek is attacking from an old hatred, an old enmity. Amalek is attacking the revelation of Hashem in the world. And Amalek is attacking the people who are headed towards the land of Israel. Now, if we understand a little bit better what Jerusalem represents, we'll understand why, what we discussed in the last class, Ki Yad Al Keska, the Torah describes Amalek as the one who is always trying to have a grip on Jerusalem, the throne of God, to prevent our grip on Jerusalem. So first of all, Jerusalem, what is Jerusalem? So Jerusalem is called the mother of Israel. Imam Shel Yisrael, the mother of the Jewish people. We are all called Bnei Tzion, the sons of Zion. What does it mean, sons of Zion? We're considered like Jerusalem is our mother. We will read in the prophets right after Tisha B'Av 7 prophecies from the book of Yeshaya. And throughout those prophecies, the Navi Yeshaya, the prophet, comforts Jerusalem as though Jerusalem were a person. We speak about Jerusalem as though Jerusalem has personality. We say, Vatomer Tziona Zavani Hashem, Zion calls out, God has left me. The whole Megillah of Lamentations is about what? Lamentations. Echa, how so? Yasheva vadad. How did she sit there all alone? Who are we talking about? Ha'ir rabat yam. The city that had masses is now hayeta ke'almana. Now she's like a widow. Who are we talking about? Jerusalem. So Lamentations is a story, is a weeping over Jerusalem. We are the byproduct of that weeping. What's happened to the Jewish people? But the focus is Jerusalem. So our capital is Yerushalayim. What's special about Yerushalayim? So Chazal say, when a person builds, we build from the ground up, right? You lay a foundation. You guys ever build with blocks? Lego, right? You lay a foundation, you build up. The Ribbono Shel Olam builds from the top down. So the Ribbono Shel Olam, when he established earth, established the holiest place, the Holy of Holies, on the Temple Mount in Yerushalayim. And from there he built the rest of earth going outward. That's our tradition, that Evan Shetiyah, the rock under the dome, is called Evan Shetiyah from the word Shatot. Shatot means foundations. Shit means to place. Yeah, I'm sorry. To place something is that word. So Shetiyah comes from the word the foundation. So Jerusalem is the source of blessing to the world. Jerusalem is the source of Torah to the world. Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah. Jerusalem is the source of prophecy to the world. We are taught that all blessing comes from there, even all rain comes from there. All our prayers are focused through Jerusalem, right? We always face Jerusalem. I don't know which side you're facing, Vienna. But wherever you are, you're facing the direction of Jerusalem, right? Tel tel piot, the Talmud says, tell the mountaintop, shekol piot ponim eleh, all mouths turn to it. By the way, not only Jewish people, those of you who have not yet converted, you should know that there's a special prayer of King Solomon in which he said, in the inauguration of the temple, that when a non-Jew prays to you, to hear to the temple, God answers his prayer. When a Jew prays to you here, answer his prayer if he deserves it. So if there are things that are important, you pray about them before you convert. Because before you convert, King Solomon said God should answer your prayers when you pray to the Temple Mount, regardless. After you convert, only if you deserve it. So get those prayers in beforehand. Afterwards too, don't get me wrong. But beforehand is also, it has its own weight. So The verse says in the end of the Torah, "Velo yikehat amim." What does it mean, "Velo yikehat amim"? So the Medrash says that is Jerusalem, that the nations will feel their teeth being knocked out, their teeth being impunged, because they will see Jerusalem and it will not be within their grasp. Our sages tell us, just as the land of Israel is most holy among all lands, so too Jerusalem is most holy among all of Israel. Right? The Mishnah in the beginning of Taharos, there are 10 levels of holiness. Well, Jerusalem is, all of Israel builds up to Yerushalayim. So, Jerusalem, you know, when you get married, there are basic concepts in a wedding that are a given. It's a given that you won't call your wife's parents' names in front of it. It's a given that she won't call your parents' names in front of you. There are givens that are not written in the contract. There are just givens. That's a decent, normal married life in Judaism, is certain givens. So one of the givens, it says in the Mishnah and Talmud and in Halacha, one of the givens is that if your wife says, "I want to move to Israel," or you say, "I want to move to Israel," it's a given that we got married with that understanding that if we can, we will move to Israel. So what happens if one of the spouses says, "I don't want to go"? So the other spouse says, "You're going against the basic concept of our contract, of our marriage contract." So the wife will say, "Where is it written in the Ksuba, right?" And you'll say, no, it's a basic, it's a given. Every Jew that gets married, the given is he wants to live in Israel. That's a halacha. Now what happens if she wants to move to Jerusalem? And you say, "Jerusalem, I'm living out here. I'm in, Karmei Tzur, wherever I'm living, on this beautiful yeshuv. I get up in the morning, as far as I can see the sunrise, sunset. I can see the hills, I can have the air. I'm going to move to Jerusalem. I'm not going to be able to afford it. I'm going to take a mortgage on a house that's one-tenth the size of our house now." Jerusalem? Nah, come on. And she says, I want to move to Jerusalem. Says the halacha, just as it's a basic concept of every marriage, that if we could, we'd move to Israel. It's a basic concept of every marriage. If we could, we move to Jerusalem. Boom. Don't tell your wives that, right? But that's it's a halacha. The concept is Jerusalem is a part of every Jew. There's no such thing as a Jew who doesn't want to live in Jerusalem. It's a basic understanding of every marriage, to the point where it says in Shulchan Aruch, if one spouse says, "I want to move," another spouse says, "I don't want to move," the one who says, "I don't want to move," is considered destroying the marriage, just like the one who says, "I don't want to move to Israel." So this idea of Yerushalayim, our capital, is a concept that's even in Halacha. Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish people. It's in our hearts always. It's not only in our Shmona Esrei every day, "May we see your rebuilding of Zion." That's our focus. So our sages tell us that Jerusalem is considered the throne of Hashem, and the nations always want to grab it from us. And that's the war that Amalek is leading against us. Our sages say, what does Yerushalayim represent? The Talmud says, where is Yerushalayim referenced? You know, when you bench, you say an after blessing on bread. So the first three components of the after blessing are biblical. You have to thank for the bread, that's the first blessing. You have to thank for the land of Israel, it's the second blessing. You have to talk about Jerusalem, that's the third blessing, right? Rachem al Yisrael v'al Yerushalayim, uvnei Yerushalayim. The central themes, our sages say, v'hanetzach zo Yerushalayim. You want to know where Yerushalayim is referenced in the verse? When we speak about eternity, that's Jerusalem. The word eternity represents Jerusalem. So Jerusalem represents the concept that we're beyond time. There are current challenges, there are previous challenges, there are future challenges, and I can see beyond all of that. That's Jerusalem. Jerusalem represents that idea. Jerusalem was established, firstly, when God created the world. Jerusalem has... We could go on the rest of the night about Jerusalem, but I don't want to. Our focus was Amalek, but when I start talking about Jerusalem, you guys ask me, what does Jerusalem have to do with Amalek? So I'm going to cut it short. If you guys will want another class on Yerushalayim, so on a different occasion, we'll have a class focused just on Yerushalayim. Just an interesting footnote. We said, V'hanetzach zo Yerushalayim, eternity is Jerusalem. The Marsha explains that line in Talmud, V'hanetzach, comes from the word nitzachon. What does the word nitzachon mean?
Victory.
Jerusalem represents victory. The constant battle over Jerusalem is the constant question of who is victorious. The idea of who holds on to Jerusalem is the question of who is victorious. Now, Jerusalem was owned by all of Israel. It wasn't given to a specific tribe. All of Israel divided Jerusalem. And Jerusalem represents the ability to connect to God. Technically, it's not a concept that we can understand. God is infinite, And man is not only finite, man is minuscule. Man is finite not only in his materialistic measurements, but also he's finite in time. Our life is like the shadow of a bird flying overhead. You ever try to sit in the shade of a bird flying overhead? You're not going to get too much out of it, right? That's what life is like, says King David. Life is like the shadow, and not the shadow of a tree or a building, but the shadow of a bird that's flying by. And God is interested in my prayer. God connects to me. God allows me to connect to Him. It's not a concept we can understand just using our logic. We can be taught the concept, and if the prophet tells me that, okay, so I hear there's such a concept. You ask me logically, I should be able to connect to God? I don't see it. Ah, the Torah tells me it's so. God tells me it's so. Okay, so then it's so. That's what Jerusalem represents. Comes Amalek, and Amalek stresses the exact opposite. Amalek comes and says, are you sure? Are you really sure? Amalek comes and says, why don't you enjoy life now? Amalek comes and says, maybe there's an angle where you guys are divisive and I can tackle you there. Amalek is the idea of, let me capture the Jewish people at their weak spot. Let me find where I can weaken their connection to God. Let me see where I can get in the way of the world's connection to Hashem. Just as Yerushalayim represents the connection, Amalek represents the fight against the connection. And every person has within him both sides, right? Am I more here? Am I more there? But Amalek is the brazen, outspoken fight against. And the mere fact that Amalek exists already weakens everyone else. Because Amalek says, I'm willing to stand for being against that. When you're willing to say something openly, so then you strengthen everyone else. And it goes in both directions. When we stand openly and we say, we believe in Hashem, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, everyone else is stronger. But when Amalek comes and says, I openly stand opposed to the Jewish people, so now they've weakened everyone. So that's the recurring theme of Amalek, which is representative by the idea that Amalek fights for Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim is the apex. Yerushalayim is the central point where we converge. Haharatov, it's called, the good mountain, the mountain where Hashem says, I'm willing to meet with the Jewish people. So that's our battle with Amalek in a nutshell. It deserves a much longer class. This is really just touching the tip of the iceberg. We have to still discuss many aspects, but for now, we'll have to pause.